From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 144 of Little Brother for the 24th of February, 2024. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com, but let's get started. The European Court of Human Rights was recently hearing the case of Putashov versus Russia. Without digging deeply into the case, I want to highlight one of the court's findings, which is that legal limits on end-to-end encryption should not be permitted. The court describes end-to-end encryption as having, quote, been widely used as a means of protecting the right to respect for private life and for the privacy of correspondence online, end quote. The court has concluded, quote, the respondent state, that is Russia, has overstepped any acceptable margin of appreciation in this regard, end quote. At the other end of the spectrum, we find India. There have been a number of bomb threats in the megacity of Chennai in the state of Tamil Nadu. The threats originated from an email account hosted on ProtonMail, a privacy-oriented email service headquartered in Switzerland. In a suitably knee-jerky reaction, the Indian government is moving to block ProtonMail from all of India. However, as of the most recently available information, this block has not yet taken effect. Social media platform Reddit has filed to go public. This will be the first social media IPO in about 7 years. They have filed to trade under the ticker symbol RDDT. Reddit has been online since 2005 and has never yet turned a profit. Finally, British bassist Charles Bertou has been cancelled on Facebook. In a video posted on YouTube on February 15th, Bertou explains his extended absence from the social media platform, telling his fans that all attempts to get even as much as a bad explanation from the social media giant have failed. For better or worse, social media have become a way for content creators to generate revenue, and while it is perfectly within a platform's rights to cut that stream off for any or no reason, content creators should consider the arbitrary and capricious nature of such cutoffs before using a platform. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned Recently. The story this week is about a company called Infosys McCamish Systems, or IMS for short. They are an IT consultancy in the digital transactions field, so basically a consultant for any kind of company doing e-commerce. They were allegedly breached, leading to a breach of one of their larger customers, Bank of America. Bank of America have not disclosed the number of affected customers as of yet. The LockBit ransomware gang have claimed responsibility for the attack and claim to have encrypted over 2,000 systems during the breach. I have a couple of follow-ups to recent stories. Last summer, I broke into my hiatus to bring you a story about a police raid on a newspaper in Kansas. That story falls a little bit outside of my normal coverage zone of technology, but definitely qualified as a story of crime, greed, and corruption, and telling on Big Brother. For those who may have missed it, it's episode 133A and published on the 15th of August, 2023. The whole episode is dedicated to that story alone, so just go listen to it if you want the background. The follow-up that I have to this story is that Phyllis K. Zorn, one of the reporters for the Marion County Record, has sued the now former police chief. I wonder how he lost his job, hmm? Anyway, she is suing the now former police chief, the city of Marion, the board and commission of Marion County, Sheriff Jeff Soyuz, and former Mayor David Mayfield. In the lawsuit, she is demanding $950,000 for violations of her First and Fourth Amendment rights and for stress-related medical impacts, including the return of seizures that had been under control for 5 years prior to the raid. The other follow-up I have concerns the Amber Alert that I talked about back in episode 136. While the bulk of the story focused on the terrible execution of the Amber Alert itself, I would be negligent if I did not acknowledge that there was a little girl who went missing. As you may recall, she was quickly found. The news this week is that the suspect, Craig Ross Jr., has pleaded guilty. He is facing 47 years to life. Once again, I have a number of AI-related stories, so let's have an AI roundup. In Holland, a man by the name of Tim Hansen was fined €380, approximately $411 US, at the time of this writing, for using a mobile phone while driving. There's a problem with this, though, which is that he was not using a mobile phone. He was, in fact, scratching his head. The alleged infraction was detected by an AI-powered traffic camera which spotted his right hand in the vicinity of his right ear and flagged it. Ironically, Hansen is employed in the field of computer vision. In a recent academic paper, researchers at Amazon are claiming that the large language models they've been working on have started to exhibit what they are calling emergent capabilities, that is to say, capabilities that extend beyond those that might be expected based on the data that was used to train the AI. Personally, I'm not surprised by this, as AI have often shown more ability than would seem logical. Starting from the email spam detectors based on Bayes classifiers that started to appear around 2 decades ago. At the time, they were described as uncanny. The academic paper bears a typical academic title of Base TTS, Lessons from Building a Billion-Parameter Text-to-Speech Model on 100,000 Hours of Data. It has not yet been peer-reviewed. In episode 141, I had a headline about a chatbot on General Motors' website that had been persuaded to give a customer a deal on a 2024 Chevy Tahoe for $1. I speculated at the time that GM would not honor the deal, and that turned out to be true. Meanwhile, up north, Air Canada was ordered by a civil resolution tribunal to refund a customer the difference between a bereavement rate and the rate they'd actually been charged, based on an assertion made by the airline's chatbot. Air Canada asserted that the chatbot did provide links to the correct information, but the tribunal found for the plaintiff on the grounds that Air Canada, quote, does not explain why customers should have to double-check information found in one part of its website on another part of its website, end quote. In a further note, in the case with GM, the customer could be argued not to have been acting in good faith, while in the case of Air Canada, the customer was. Finally, an Instagram user who goes by the name of Mondays Made Easy, who works as an English language arts teacher, or as we would have called them as Gen Xers, English teacher, has found an interesting and clever way to stop her students from using large language models to write their essays. On the web page that contains the students' assignments, there's a Trojan horse stuck in the middle of the assignment text. The Trojan horse comes in the form of instructions to the AI. In an extremely small font, I believe she said 4-point, in white text on a white background, rendering it invisible to a student who might be properly legitimately reading the page or even printing it out. The assumption is that a student who is lazy enough to use an LLM to write their assignments is also too lazy to check the input that gets put into the AI or the output of the AI, which will dutifully follow the hidden instructions along with the visible ones, making the plagiarism obvious. There are a handful of risks inherent in putting your data in the cloud. One we don't talk about often is that your data may become commingled with data belonging to other people. The reason we don't talk about it often is it doesn't happen often, but it seems like it might have with Wyze. Wyze is the maker of cloud-connected security cameras, and in a statement on their website, they are apologizing for such a mix-up. The problem appears to have begun with a corrupted database, which resulted in Wyze customers seeing alerts and contents from cameras that aren't theirs. They state that they are in the process of identifying the affected users and have forced logouts for everyone in order to stop the damage. A recurrent theme on this podcast since the overturn of Roe v. Wade has been the risk that location tracking would be used to monitor people's movements to political ends. Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat of Oregon, has asked the Federal Trade Commission and the Securities and Exchange Commission to look into the activities of India-based Near Intelligence. I'll give you a minute to stop giggling over the name of the company. Right, we good? Okay, so Near Intelligence is expected to have tracked the movements of individuals visiting approximately 600 Planned Parenthood's clinics in 48 states. Now, the interesting thing here is that this is not, overall, a new phenomenon. It's just now come to the fore. Data brokers were bragging about their ability to target marketing to folks in clinic waiting rooms as far back as 9 years ago. However, in this particular case, having the data aggregated by a foreign-owned company, and in the context of a situation where this information could lead to not just harassment but also state criminal prosecutions, this is not acceptable. For our last item, though, let's turn this tracking question on its head. This one actually makes me want to ask, why didn't I think of this? Apparently, a freight company in Chang'an, Hubei, China, was busted recently. Why? Get this. They put GPS trackers on police cruisers so they knew where the cops are. That's fucking brilliant. I really have no idea how this would go down stateside, but I can't imagine this went over well in China. Thank you. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. Inside jokes and snide comments are a common thing amongst computer programmers, especially in the open source community. It wouldn't be unexpected, for instance, to find an exception named fit just so that your program can throw fit. Or if you're programming in a language that raises exceptions rather than throwing them, you might name one hell so that your code can raise hell. There are the infamous threat clauses found in languages such as Perl, where you might cause an exception by adding or die to the end of a line of code. It happens in the names of programs as well. For instance, a clone of the Motif GUI system was called Lestief. A successor to an electronic mail system called Elm was called Pine, and its successor was called Ash. And a clone of the Unix more command is called Less, because, of course, less is more. Now, not all of these jokes are harmless. A module for the programming language Go made use of an internet domain that was cheekily named inet.af. And that joke was fine until politics got involved. The .af top-level domain, you might note, is for Afghanistan. With the Taliban retaking control of Afghanistan, .af became unusable, breaking code. The good news is that the Go community jumped in right away and provided a workaround. Now, by all means, keep the sense of humor going. There's some great stuff out there, but do make sure that you don't set things up to break when you do it. Of course, I suppose that I would be negligent in my duties of talking about fails if I didn't also mention the AT&T outage this past week. While the dust hasn't completely settled on the situation, the general sense of it is that technicians at AT&T were making some configuration changes and they went wrong. Here, let me read the statement from them. Quote, "Based on our initial review, we believe that today's outage was caused by the application into execution of an incorrect process used as we were expanding our network, not a cyber attack. We are continuing our assessment of today's outage to ensure we keep delivering the service that our customers deserve," end quote. All right, so someone didn't follow an SOP. That's what that sounds like to me. Now, from what I could see, the result was that devices on the AT&T network had no phone, no data, no text capability. It was essentially a no-service situation. AT&T has no roaming agreements because they generally don't need them, so the phones understandably didn't fail over to another carrier. In my first-hand experience, Wi-Fi calling worked as long as you kept a connection that you'd had before the outage. Once that connection drops, you're done. Now, to my thinking, the most important takeaway here is that it is important to have more than one way to communicate. A household with multiple people living in it, for instance, might have phones from different carriers, if there's coverage to support it, or you might have a VoIP or even a landline phone. On a side note, there are no doubt some folks who may be listening to this podcast who would consider a two-way radio as a viable emergency communication plan. As an avid radio hobbyist, let me pop that bubble for you right now. While it is true that I could personally be reached during parts of the outage by ham or GMRS radio, as I'm sure many others could as well, actually summoning help in an emergency isn't going to happen that way with any degree of reliability. While it can be better than nothing, redundancy will serve the needs of most folks more effectively. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the Crowded Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to DOA, Thriller at Play, B-Spa, Julie Bernstein, Joe Cadillac, Fungaboo, Psycho, The Axe That Slayed Me, Knight Rider 007, David, Azrael, and Mystere 73 for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pumped music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 145 will drop on March 9th. Stay safe and be well. Bad explanation. Let's do that again without the side comment. Claimed responsibility for the attack, as we in Gen Xers would have called them, just English teachers. I believe she said 4 point. While text on, It happens in the names of... It happens in the names of programs, for instance. Okay. Just so that your program can fit one. Throw one. It happens also in the names of programs. Let's start over. With the Taliban retaking control of Afghanistan... With the Taliban taking... There's some great stuff out there. But do make sure that you don't think... That you don't... I'm going to put this on pause and I'm going to fucking start this whole thing over. Where the Taliban retaking control of the country, redundancy will sever the needs... Serve.